Welcome to the Detroit Lions News Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Chap. Today, we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff happening in the NFL, happening with the Detroit Lions. There is a lot of stuff that is just going on, so we got to get to it. We got to get to the Cam Sutton saga because I have not been able to hit on it, and then we'll get to my mock draft 1.0. So if you're new to this podcast, and if you're viewing on YouTube or wherever you're viewing the podcast at, Detroit Lions News Podcast on Facebook, on Instagram, and we're going to get more active on Twitter too. I feel like that's one of our weak suits, but I'm on Twitter at Detroit Joe Chap, and you can find me there on Twitter. If you're new to the podcast, thank you for listening, and you'll be getting a good podcast, so don't you worry. Let's get to the news and notes of the day. Obviously, there's a lot to talk about with this Detroit Lions football team. Rod Wood spoke, Brad Holmes spoke, Dan Miller was with Campbell, but Brad Holmes had something to say. We're going to get to that. But I want to hit on what Dan Campbell said today to the beat writers at the owner meetings in Arizona, I believe it's at. This is one of them. Extensions for Jared Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown are organizational priorities per Dan Campbell. Those talks are underway. Obviously, we know in the grand scheme of things that these talks can play out and they can just keep going. And there's not really a set date. Usually it's when you least expect it. I remember me and my co-host on the Run Alert podcast, Cindy, we predicted in December, we heard that there was going to be Dylan Larkin was going to be getting a contract, and it didn't happen until like February. So these things take time, especially with the general managers like Brad Holmes and Stevie Y. They tend to cross their T's and dot their I's. So that's something that you need to know. Obviously, the discussions are underway. I assume that the discussions will go further once we get past the draft because that opens up a lot of free time for Brad Holmes and some of the scouting staff. Rod Wood also spoke. He said Kyle Meinke of the MLives talked to Rod Wood. Obviously, it was owner meetings. And he said he asked Rod Wood what y'all would want to know. When can we expect new uniforms? And Rod Wood said before the draft. So the Detroit Lions will be getting brand new uniforms. We told you 2 years ago on the Detroit Lions News podcast Facebook page, when it was originally Detroit Lions News, we told you that the Detroit Lions are going to go back to kind of their own history. One of the things that I've heard from a lot of people in terms of the Detroit Lions and this current organizational standpoint is, When they went to design uniforms a couple years ago, they wanted to honor the history of the Detroit Lions being an original member of the NFL, but they also wanted to move, have a modern twist to it. So I'm very interested to see what they do with it because I really like the Barry uniforms with the blue face mask. I love the Billy Sims era where they had, those jerseys were pretty sick. You know, if they went back to the block lettering, that'd be pretty cool, too. I really do admire the block lettering, and I think it looks pretty damn dope on some of these players. But new uniforms are coming before the draft, so we're going to – anything that comes up with that, we're gonna definitely let you know. April 18th is a tentative date. That's what I hear from a lot of people. John Macaroon, who sometimes does a podcast with Darcy on the Detroit Lions News podcast Facebook page, he was talking, he said December, April 18th. So April 18th seems like a date that seems like everyone is getting, but we still don't know. So stay tuned for that. Obviously, when Dan Campbell spoke to the media, Dan Campbell was talking to Dan Miller, and he said, Dan Campbell said when he and his staff watched the NFC Championship game, they didn't even watch the first half. Straight to the second where things went south. Talk about ripping the Band-Aid off. That's what Dan Campbell said. Dan Campbell, I like what Dan Campbell's doing. This is another example of his leadership. It's easy to look at the things you do right. It's easy as hell to look at the things you do right. The one thing that it's harder to do is looking at the things when they go south. And especially in a time and a moment like that where you were in the NFC Championship game, you had a healthy lead, and you just go in the tank, that's a huge issue. And I think Dan Campbell and his coaching staff, they get it. Obviously, they're a former player, so they get it even more. But But this is a Detroit Lions team that is just showing how well ran they are with the way that these coaches operate. And I feel like what the coaches said, what Dan Campbell said, is how the team operates as well. And that's a good thing to have in an organization, because when you're trying to revert history, like the Detroit Lions have tried to do multiple times before Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, you can't really go forward unless you look back. And looking back is the most painful part, but it's also the most rewarding part. And I think Dan Campbell really understands that. So let's get to some more. Rod Wood had a funny interaction with with Troy Vincent. Kyle Meinke, this is from Kyle Meinke. He says, just got out of a meaty session with Rod Wood. Now, meaty shouldn't have been the right word here for Mr. Meinke, but he used it. A highlight was his response to a question about his conversations with the league after the fiasco in Dallas. He called Troy Vincent at 9 a.m. Sunday, but Vincent was at church. Wood's response, did you pray for better officiating? For once in my life, you know, I know a lot of people give Rod Wood grief, right? I know a lot of people give Rod Wood grief. But the one thing I'd say about Rod Wood, that was a witty response, man. And I have to give him credit because I didn't think he was capable of doing that. But Rod Wood has shown me over time. He's a savvy guy, man. No wonder he's been working with the Ford so long. And I feel like, you know, obviously he's a great business person, but I feel like he's a great business negotiator. And I think that's huge as a, you know, a team president. You know, talk with the league, but you're in a professional manner. And he's obviously done negotiations for the Ford family. He knows how it works. He knows how to do it. And I think that is a major stepping point to this team, because if Rod Wood is just focusing on the business aspect, they hired Chris Spielman for a advisory role, but you know he's more involved in the football realm. This shows me that the Detroit Lions organization is well put together. They know their jobs. They know their goals. They know what they have to do. And it goes from Rod Wood all the way down. And that's a great, stable way to do it. I thought that was a very, very witty response by Rod Wood. And it was actually pretty funny. So Brad Holmes spoke as well. And, you know, I'll get to this in a minute, but the Lions, Dan Campbell also said that there is a chance the Lions could do joint practice again with the Giants in New Jersey. Said he'd love to do two again this year, like he did last year. Dan Campbell also said Lions still in contact with Josh Reynolds, who remains a free agent. Dan Campbell says they're happy to have Donovan Peoples-Jones back to help his experience and ability to the position. And that is what, you know, we're talking about. So let's get to what Brad Holmes said. So Brad Holmes is speaking to the media, and this is something that I really wanted to hit on in terms of what Brad Holmes was saying. Now, if you are new to this podcast, you know I operate in a really truthful manner. So stick with that. So Brad Holmes said today, I truly believe this was our best free agency haul that we've had since we've been here. Now, yesterday I posted on the page, the analytics people, they love the Lions, the winners and losers of the offseason. Detroit's fourth. So the analytics, the projection model that Austin Mack uses, the Lions are really well served to be a really good team moving forward. And when you look at the players that they've added, you know, especially in the defensive line, you look at, you know, DJ Reader and Marcus Davenport. Am I really high on Marcus Davenport? No, I'm not really high on Marcus Davenport. But what I can say about Marcus Davenport is I feel like he has, you know, if he could stay healthy, that's number one. If he could stay healthy, that will be the major cog to that, if he could stay healthy. And the second part about it is, you know, DJ Reader, I really wanted from the get-go. So I was really happy to get DJ Reader. That was a good one for me. But I thought this was a good offseason. I'm not going to sit here and poo-poo it when I think the Detroit Lions did a damn good job at, you know, getting needs. They did need a defensive tackle like DJ Reader. They did need a defensive end that could help out. Maybe Marcus Davenport, you know, goes back to when he was with the Saints and Aaron Glenn. That could happen. Am I banking on it? No. But obviously the Detroit Lions, you know, are banking on James Houston to be a critical piece to their team. And I'm not going to poo-poo that. I think that's a huge part of this team. I think it's a huge part of what this team is looking at. And to be honest, I think that if Brad Holmes believes that, I have to believe that he knows what he's going to be doing in the draft so far. And I look at the draft, and it's endless possibilities. And when we get to mock draft 1.0, you're obviously going to see, you know, there's endless possibilities you can go. And I'll explain why I picked the players I picked, but it's just a fun exercise because you get to see, you know, the players and the stats. And if you're on the YouTube page, I'm going to cut it up so you guys can have a better understanding of the who I pick and why I picked them. And then I'll put the mock draft on the Detroit Lions News Facebook page and the One Pride Nation group and, you know, my personal Facebook that you could follow as well, Joe Chapp on Facebook. But I think what Brad Holmes is saying, though, you know, this being their most productive offseason, their best offseason, I think Carlton Davis, I know a lot of people look at him as a cornerback too. I potentially think he could be a cornerback one, just from my prerogative. But I really believe in my heart that Amik Robertson is going to be a really damn good player for the Detroit Lions. You know, when you go back and watch some of the Vegas games like I did after the free agency class, the one thing I seen with Robertson was he's just a dog. And he's gritty. He's tough. And he doesn't give up. He's in the right positions. He's got a really good ball playmaking skills. I thought that was really apparent on the film, especially in that Green Bay game where he made the interception. But I really do think this Detroit Lions team did get better. We'll see how much they got better moving forward, but I truly do think they did get better. And I'm, you know what? Look, we're not going to know until we get on the football field. There's a lot of people that could speculate. I understand if they're going to speculate, make a educational, proactive kind of prerogative of what they view the offseason as. But what I view the offseason as is a good barometer of where they're going. And I thought that DJ Reader was a great pickup because if you notice when Isaiah Bugs was on the team and why he's not on the team, there's a reason why. When Isaiah Bugs was on the team, they played different. And Lee McNeil looked different. So getting a guy like DJ Reader who does take up space, who does, you know, make things happen in the interior, I think that's a crucial position that they nailed. We'll see, though, guys. I mean, let's be honest. This is a good Detroit Lions team. There's a lot of ways they can go. But this is... This is definitely something that you're trying to get and get done. And I think this Detroit Lions team is really set up well for the foreseeable future. So we're going to go to the next segment. Obviously, if you're on YouTube, you know, there will be a little bit of a short break, but it's probably just going to play through. It's not going to be fast. We're just pausing the podcast for a minute. For me to catch my breath because I'm doing this alone. I don't usually do podcasts alone, but I usually have some guests or, you know, Tyler or Walter or whatever. And today I'm doing it by myself, so it's going to be fun. But we'll get through it. Next, we'll talk about the Cam Sutton saga because I feel like the Cam Sutton saga I haven't really hit on. So I want to do that next. So I'll talk to you in a minute. Obviously, I'm going to pause it, so. Thank you. It was a seamless transition, as you see. So let's get to the Cam Sutton situation. This is a very ongoing situation, but obviously it's over for the Detroit Lions. you know, when I got the news, I got the text from Tyler and Mayank, who does some work on the page. He does a tremendous job. But when I got the text, I was flabbergasted at what I was seeing from, you know, Cam Sutton and that he, the fact that there is actually a sheriff looking for him. So it starts with the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office needs your assistance in locating a wanted subject, Cameron Sutton, age 29. And you can obviously see the picture. Looks like Cam Sutton. It is Cam Sutton. You kind of get the picture. So in my mind, I'm like, well, obviously innocent until proven guilty. That's number one. But then I as more and more came out, and especially what Rod Wood said yesterday, it really rubbed me the wrong way. So here's tweet number two. This was probably the day of, but Kyle Meinke said he just spoke with police. This is the Lions' Cam Sutton. He suspect of battering a woman at 4:52 a.m. on March 7th. He fled the scene by the time police arrived. Has not shown up at his home in the area, and has turned his phone off. Police are now looking for him to take a step to look for him. Then you go to the Lions releasing Cam Sutton. Obviously, just there's a ton of things that you go into this, but it sucks for a variety of reasons, and I'll get to that in a minute. But Lions released Cam Sutton. And then, obviously, Eric Schlitt, who is a Pride of Detroit, had this great tweet. Pro Football Talks put out, Sutton had 10.5 fully guaranteed salary for 2024. Per source, the Lions avoided the guarantee before cutting him. So that was a pretty smart move. Eric Schlitt says, it appears the Lions do have language built into the contract to protect themselves against a situation like the one Sutton finds himself in. Therefore, they should be able to avoid the 10.5 base salary, but will still be on the hook for the 8.72 signing bonus already paid. We go to tweet four, which was yesterday. Lions president Rod Wood talked about the decision to release Cam Sutton. Said this was a right move considering the charges and the fact that he hadn't cooperated with authorities. He was actually in the building at Allen Park when the team learned of the warrant. Wood said representatives of the team did speak with him and urged him to turn himself in. He cut off communication with the Detroit Lions, and the Detroit Lions released him. Look, I'm going to be totally and completely honest with you because that's just what I do. There's two things I see with Cam Sutton in this situation. Two things. One, I have a hard time viewing you as a football player when you can't take accountability for your actions. That's number one. Number two, when you don't have the courage as a man to turn yourself in to authorities, obviously, you know, in certain situations, especially if you're, you know, a guy who maybe works minimum wage, it's a lot tougher to get lawyers. But obviously, if you're Cam Sutton, you could afford a damn lawyer and they can cooperate with the police and you can figure out a way to turn yourself in the most peacefully manner. Here's the thing. Cam Sutton knows the team that he plays for. And the Detroit Lions, they're under no circumstances, could have just let this go by the wayside. You know, this is a team, this is a franchise that has a culture. It's easy to see. It's blatantly put. You can see it from the outside, and I'm sure it's just as strong in the inside. And when I look at Cam Sutton, I have a hard time believing. First of all, when you look into Brad Holmes' eyes, you know, Brad Holmes is an advocate for protecting women's sports. I'm pretty sure he would be pretty upset about this. I know Dan Campbell has a daughter. I'm pretty sure they would be upset with it. But when you can't turn yourself into authorities, you are basically admitting guilt. If you don't have any reason to flee, you just turn yourself in and you're fine to go. And you can cooperate with authorities. And maybe Cam Sutton's never getting released from the Detroit Lions. Maybe, just maybe. But by him fleeing, it basically proves without a doubt that he is guilty of something. And I'm not going to speculate of what he's guilty of, because that's irresponsible. I know I see it on the Twitter of what he's alleged to do. I'm not going to get into that at all. What I will say is, when you flee, you open up the possibilities and a lot of people can start talking. And if I'm Cam Sutton, if I'm representing Cam Sutton in any way, I'm trying to tell him, look, dude, just do the smart thing, okay? Just do the smart thing. If you didn't do it, have the courage, turn yourself in, let the legal process play out, and then you can go on your merry way. If you did do it, you got to be accountable for your actions. And, you know, tying this into football is going to be rough. It's not going to be easy, but when you're not accountable for your actions, how can I trust you to be accountable for your play on the field? You see what I'm trying to say? And that's kind of the dilemma that, you know, Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell, and Rod Wood are going through. Obviously, Sheila Ford Hemp, she's a woman. She signs his paychecks. Obviously, she wouldn't be happy about the whole situation. But when I look at the Detroit Lions and this Cam Sutton situation, it couldn't end any other way. And I know people are going to say innocent till proven guilty, but the reality of the situation is that's in the court of law. That's not with your employer. You know, a team like the Detroit Lions, they can take action quicker than they can in the law. You are given innocent till proven guilty in the court of law. It doesn't protect you from your employment. Your employer can get rid of you at any time. You know, I'm pretty sure if random Joe Schmo has a domestic abuse situation and he's representing a company, I'm pretty sure that he's going to be fired from his position if he's in a public position. Like, that's just the way this rolls. Because without a doubt, there's two things. On Sundays, you represent the Detroit Lions. But Monday through Saturday, you also represent the Detroit Lions. And if you're in a public position like Cam Sutton, you represent the Detroit Lions through and through. Because what you do can play out in the media, and it's bad look. It's bad look for the Michigan. It's bad look for the Detroit Lions. It's kind of similar to what happened with Mel Tucker. You know, obviously that's a personal thing that he was going through, but at the same time, it was a bad look for the Michigan State Spartans. It was a bad look for the university, and they had to cut ties with him, and they voided his salary. So when you're given a very large, hefty salary, you're also expected to live up to it. You're expected to do the right thing. You're expected to not make your employer, especially the Detroit Lions or any other organization, not look bad. And when you flee, please, because you were at the Detroit Lions facility and they urged you to turn yourself in, the bad look. It's just a bad look. And for Cam Sutton, I had high hopes for him. I really did. I thought he was going to turn around. Obviously, I knew he was hurt last year. So I wanted to see what he was capable of when he wasn't hurt. But after this all happened, obviously, we knew the Band-Aid was off. It was going to end in the way that we didn't expect it to end. You know, obviously, you expect every player to live out their contract for the most part. Retirements happen. A bad play happens. But ultimately, you're like, okay, I think this could be a situation we could put ourselves in. And unfortunately, Cam Sutton proved he can't be a member of the Detroit Lions and he can't be a member of the organization. And that's a tough thing because I'm sure people in the room loved Cam Sutton. You know, I'm pretty sure maybe he's going through something. I'm not going to speculate on none of that, but just in the present moment, like, you have to have the mindset of, I got to do what's right. And even if I'm making myself look bad, if I didn't do nothing wrong, we're going to prove my innocence, and I'm going to turn myself in, and I'm going to go back to work. When you flee police, when you flee the sheriff, when you flee a potential situation that you put yourself into, allegedly, that's an issue. And I think that's why Cam Sutton is a release. Obviously, if he would have just turned himself in, maybe, just maybe, there could have been a spot where Cam Sutton wasn't going to be released. But once he cut off communication with the Detroit Lions, and once he fled and didn't turn himself in after they urged him to turn himself in and get counsel, obviously you look at that and you go, man, that's just a rough spot to be in. And this puts the Detroit Lions in an awkward position, because as Dan Campbell said today, which I'm going to pull it up in a minute, right here. It's Dan Campbell said today, to Dan Miller, said some notes from Dan Campbell going on the ongoing media session. Loss of Sutton adds urgency to add another cornerback. Still looking for help at safety. Branch could see some time at safety this year. Obviously, the Detroit Lions would have loved to have Cam Sutton, and now he's put a clog in the wheel of what could happen, and it's altered my mock draft, to be honest. But I know Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, they didn't want to see this. I'm sure Sheila Fort Hamp didn't want to see this, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot of Lions fans that didn't want to see this. I know there was a lot of Lions fans at the time that were happy because it was play on the field, which is unfortunate, because you shouldn't be happy about the situation. There's just no way to be happy about this situation. There's no way to really talk about it. All that you could say is that he should have done the right thing. He didn't. That's the issue. And the Detroit Lions move on. And next we'll get to the mock draft. It's going to be an interesting mock draft, because obviously Cam Sutton's situation kind of pulled us off. But we'll get to it in the next segment. I'm Joe Chapp with the Detroit Lions News Podcast. Welcome to the Mock Draft 1.0. And I know there's a lot of people that are going to come at me and say, this isn't what I would do, Joe. This isn't what I would do. Well, this is not your mock draft. But if you have an opinion on it, let me know in the comments. We'll talk. And we'll tangle schwanzes, and maybe we'll meet in the middle. But I think this is a good mock draft for the Detroit Lions, especially my first mock draft. It's never perfect. Obviously, things can change, especially with free agents being added. And we heard Dan Campbell today earlier in the podcast. If you listen to the podcast, Detroit Lions News Podcast, I'll put it in the YouTube description for you. But I was talking about Dan Campbell. There's an urgency to get a cornerback in free agency or the draft. There is obviously stuff on Gilmore, Steven Nelson still available that I like. But I think the Detroit Lions, I think they're going to go a corner in this draft. So let's get to it. My mock draft 1.0. For the first pick of the draft, I picked Kool-Aid McKinstry. And I'll get to the reasons why, but I'll just go in order, and we'll do this. If you're on the podcast, you're listening in the audio version, you can go on the YouTube. I'll put the YouTube link in the description. Round 2, 61 overall, edge rusher, Marshawn Neyland. Round 3, 73rd pick overall, Devontae Walker, the wide receiver from North Carolina, who played half the year because he was ineligible, because there was eligibility concerns with the NCAA, which we know the NCAA is a total farce anyways. Round 5, pick 164, Trevor Keegan, the guard from Michigan. I'll get to reasons why I like Trevor Keegan as a developmental guard, especially with Kevin Zeitler and Graham Glasgow being the starting guards. And then if we need Keegan or we need Sorsdahl as a guard replacement, these could be guys that we could use, especially with Kevin Zeitler being on a one-year contract. Round 6, pick 201, I picked cornerback Josh Wallace from Michigan. I think Josh Wallace is an underrated cornerback in this draft. I'll get to the reasons why. Round 6, 205, four picks later, I picked center Dylan McMahon. I know Frank Ragnow has an issue with him potentially being a player who could potentially be on the edge of retirement. And the reason I went with Dylan McMahon, I think he could be a developmental center to learn under Frank Ragnow. I think this would be a great spot to get that center. I think Dylan McMahon is one of the steals of the draft, to be honest. I don't think a lot of people really paid attention to North Carolina State. And then with round 7, pick 249, I picked the kicker, Harrison Mevis. Obviously, I can't really go into the season with Michael Badgley as a kicker, so I said I'm going to go with the heavy kicker, Harrison Mevis from Missouri. And if you watch some of the games, he's got a great leg, and he's really clutch. He kicked a game winner with one of the games I was watching, and it was just perfect over there. So I want to get to the reasons why I picked these players. So let's start with Kool-Aid McKinstry. And Kool-Aid, these are some Pro Football Focus grades, and you know I'm not big on Pro Football Focus, but I just want to give you a grasp of what I seen on film and what the Pro Football Focus is saying, and it kind of mirrors each other, to be honest. So Pro Football Focus, they nailed these college grades. But Kulik McKinstry was the first pick of my draft. He had a good coverage grade. It was completion percentage was pretty good, 48.7%. Run defense grade was really good. Man coverage grade was really good. Zone coverage grade was really good. It's great to have a guy who's good in man. Low completion percentage, but I really like a cornerback who is good in run stopping, run defense. Because eventually, over the course of a game, you're going to get a run to the outside, and you got to make those tackles. And there's some cornerbacks that will shy away from those tackles, and I don't like those cornerbacks. And I'm sure Dan Campbell don't like those quarterback corners, and I'm sure Aaron Glenn don't like those corners because, you know, the reason that you got Kendall Vildor last year and the reason that you got some of these guys that you had last year was they were good in run defense. And that's a crucial part of the game because, as we see with our run game, you can wear down a defense, you can take time off the clock, and if you're a corner, I need you to make a tackle. And run defense, when you're good in the run defense, I can count on you to make a tackle in the open field as well. So I went with Kool-Aid with my first pick, and obviously that was a pretty damn good pick. But my second pick was Marshawn Neyland. And a lot of people are going to look at Marshawn Neyland and say he went to Western Michigan. I understand that. But when you look at these grades that he had, this pass rush grade was off the charts, really good. His run defense grade was 83.4, really good. Every one of these you see there, basically at the end, his pass rush win rate was 17.3%. His run stop rate was 11.0. And to be honest, when I watched Western Michigan, he stood out. He stood out, number one, because he made tackles when on the edge. One of the real things I loved about Marshawn Neyland, there's a couple of scrambling quarterbacks in the MAC, and he really chased them down really well. And the one thing I really liked about Marshawn Neyland was this simple, but yet a lot of edge rushers don't have this. And when Aiden Hutchinson came to the league, he really didn't have this sense of, okay, I got to contain my edge. He contains his edge really well. With all those running quarterbacks they have in the MAC, he did a damn good job, and I love seeing it. And he doesn't have to be a superstar. He just has to be good. I look at Marshawn Neyland, I think the way he's good in the run defense, I think the way he's good in the pass rush win rate, I think he's a solid player to add to this defensive line. You add in a rotation with James Houston, with Marcus Davenport, with Josh Pascal, this could be a really good pick that could really end up really good for Detroit. There's some things he got to work on. The one thing I read on the NFL.com and what I see on film was sometimes his first step is a little laggy. Sometimes he's a little bit slow off the ball, but most of the time he does get a good grip on it. And when he played up to different levels of competition, he played pretty well over the course of his career. So let's go. Obviously, I went through Marshawn Neyland. This is going to be the interesting pick. It's Tez Walker. And Tez Walker is an X-Y receiver that I think could help the Detroit Lions full stop. His receiving grade for Pro Football Focus was 68.3. It was good. His yards per run route was 2.28. It wasn't that great, but it was high. His drop rate's a little bit too high, but listen, he's going to drop balls. Yeah. This is a third-round wide receiver. What you're hoping is that he gets better over time. I think part of the reason that he struggled this year, and this is just me, part of the reason I think he struggled this year was because of him playing the limited amount of games that he played because he was ineligible with the eligibility concerns from the NCAA. We all know the NCAA is stupid as hell, but he came in there and I felt like there was games where he was trying to catch up to the speed of play. And I felt like he was really behind, and I really don't want to hold it against him because it's hard to put yourself in a football season when it's already started and trying to gain ground. We've seen that with J-Mo. You know, J-Mo came in off his suspension. It took a little while for him to get going. And then when he got going, I mean, He got, I think his best game was in the NFC Championship game. So those layoffs do hurt. They do. I can't look at Devontae Walker and say, yeah, that's the reason why. I can't say, you know, he's not a good ball player because he had a lot of drops. I think a lot of those drops were the result of not playing for the first couple games. That's what I point to. He had a good quarterback in Drake May, a pro quarterback in Drake May. He did a damn good job. I thought he was really, really well orchestrated. Let's get to the rest of Tez Walker. His graded versus man coverage was low. Again, I attribute this to him being kind of rusty to start. Towards the end of the year, he started to be better in man coverage. He started to get separation, and that was pretty good to get. But the one thing that stands out to me with Tez Walker is the contested catch rate. You see that 58.8%. That's really good. And look, your X wide receiver, they don't have to be speedy. They have to go up and get the ball. You know, I think of a guy like, you know, obviously Josh Reynolds isn't speedy. He just goes up and gets the ball. I think a guy is like Zay Jones, not a fast guy by any stretch of the imagination. You know, you got Amon-Ra St. Brown or Jameson Williams. You don't need a fast guy. You just need a guy who can go up and make a catch. And Devontae Walker has showed that he could do that. And towards the end of the year, I thought Tez Walker was really starting to play his best football. And I felt like the eligibility concerns that the NCAA had, I felt that really hampered his development. And I think that when you look at these stats again, I think you could attribute it to not playing for the first part of the year. That's what I've attributed to. So, you know, when he came back, the first couple games I watched, they were pretty nonchalant. And then he got better as the season went on, like I said. So that's it. So going on to Trevor Keegan, obviously Trevor Keegan is a guy that I look at as a guy who could develop under Kevin Zeitler, under Graham Glasgow. This is a guy that really needs to improve his run blocking. You know, you watch Michigan and you watch the national championship game, the holes he was doing, I felt like the run block grade that Pro Football Focus gave him was a little bit misleading. I thought there was a lot of interesting blocks that he had. There was a lot of pulling that he did with Michigan and his zone grade, which Michigan went to his zone for a little bit, especially against Penn State and Ohio State. I thought he was good in that game. I thought mostly, you know, when Blake Corum started to run over Penn State, they went to Trevor Keegan's side. And obviously, you know, Zach Zenter got hurt later in the year and, you know, Michigan didn't really skip a beat. So, you know, Trevor Keegan's a really special player. I think he would be a great developmental guy under Kevin Zeitler, under Graham Glasgow. I think this is an opportunity that you have with Trevor Keegan to develop him. You know, Hank Fraley is a monster at the offensive line position as a coach. You know, the way he got Coyote Osika to play good football for the most part, Colby Sorzall played games. He played pretty well for the most part. You know, Dan Skipper was in there for a while. He played pretty good for the most part. I feel like with Hank Fraley, he puts together a hodgepodge sometimes, and he still gets good results. I look at Trevor Keegan as someone that he can really develop and take under his wing, and so can Kevin Zeitler, and so can Graham Glasgow, because Graham Glasgow went to Michigan, and I feel like that's a little bit of a great thing that Detroit has built in right now. I think they can take that step and say, okay, we're going to go draft a guy who could potentially be a developmental guy in Trevor Keegan and make the most of it. Let's go back to the mock draft. Obviously, I have Josh Wallace at the 201st pick. And when I look at Josh Wallace, I'm getting him up right now. When I look at Josh Wallace, you look at Josh Wallace and his coverage grade was really good. His run defense grade was really good. Man coverage grade was really good. Had a higher completion rate percentage. His zone coverage grade was really good as well. And when you look on film and you watch the Michigan football games, the one thing that stood out to me is they started to attack Josh Wallace a lot late this season. And his best games came against Penn State and Ohio State and Washington and Alabama. And I felt like he did a damn good job because a lot of teams were realizing late in the year, which I don't know why it took them that long, but they were realizing that Mikey Sander still was a good player. They were realizing that Will Johnson is just an absolute animal. And at that point in time, they started throwing at Josh Wallace all the freaking time. And I felt like Josh Wallace was getting a lot of good passes thrown at him, and he was making some good plays on the ball. He was playing well. His completion, the coverage rate, the completion percentage against obviously was a little bit higher because that is the only person that they were really throwing at. They weren't really throwing at Will Johnson. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. had a really damn good game against Will Johnson, but for the most part, Josh Wallace made some really crucial pass breakups. And I'd like to see what he would do as a developmental cornerback. I mean, you get these guys in the the fifth and sixth round, these cornerbacks. You're not really looking at them and going, okay, I think this cornerback could potentially be a starter. You're not looking at him as a day one starter. Sure, there's outliers. Sure, there's players that can have, an impact from the word go. But these guys in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, especially as cornerbacks, I mean, cornerback is a one position in the NFL where you could afford a year to learn. It's a faster game. The quarterbacks are better. The wide receivers are better. And it wouldn't help to learn under Aaron Glenn. It wouldn't help to learn under Carlton Davis. It wouldn't hurt to learn under, Amik Robertson. It would help to learn anything. You're learning from everyone. You're getting tips and points, and that's as good as a rookie. And, Josh Wallace is a guy that I would really take a shot on. I think Josh Wallace is going to be a damn good corner in this league. The way that he played at Michigan, how he was getting thrown at all the time, I thought that was very, very interesting. And I just thought that Josh Wallace proved that he was a gritty guy. And he came from UMass. He was a transfer portal addition by the Michigan Wolverines. And he played pretty damn well at Michigan. And he was a big reason why they had a great year late in the year. Now, let's get to the rest of the mock draft. Dylan McMahon. Now, this is an interesting one because obviously people are going to be like, who is this Dylan McMahon guy? He's a center. And his run block rate for the year was 67.8. It was pretty damn good. Pass block rate was pretty good. It was not as high as I would like it to be. Zone grade was pretty good. True pass block grade was pretty damn good. His gap grade was in the middle. But again, he's going to have the opportunity to learn under Frank Ragnow. That's what I look at with Dylan McMahon. I think Dylan McMahon can be a steal for this team. I think Dylan McMahon, the way that he plays, is just dead set. Like he wants to bury people. When you watch North Carolina State, they went behind him all the time. It was very interesting to watch North Carolina State last year. They didn't have a really talented team, but the offensive line that they had, there was some underclassmen there that are going to be in the draft next year. But Dylan McMahon stood out because they ran by him all the time. Like they ran, either a dive to the left side or a dive to the right side, and he was going up to the second level quickly, and just thought it was a good pick for the Detroit Lions there. And then you look at the Detroit Lions moving forward. I mean, the Detroit Lions with the Harrison Mevis pick, obviously Harrison Mevis was the last pick of the draft for me. He's a guy who can hit clutch kicks. If you watch Missouri, he was really good. He's an accurate kicker, can make all the kicks that you want him to make. And personally, I thought Harrison Mevis would have been the best pick personally in that seventh round because you need a kicker to kind of compete with Michael Badgley. So Michael Badgley and the Detroit Lions, we'll see what happens. But this is an interesting thing for the Detroit Lions. I think they have the opportunity to be a good football team. And this mock draft is a staple of it. Obviously, you can draft some players that are developmental, like Josh Wallace, like Dylan McMahon, like Trevor Keegan. And you're not really basing your hope on if they're going to be good. That's what you base your hope on. So I look at this mock draft and I go, this is a good chance for the Detroit Lions to get better. And this mock draft puts this team in perspective that they can make the right moves. And overall, I like the mock draft. Is there some things I would change? Absolutely. But I think this mock draft really puts it in perspective of what the Detroit Lions could do at that position. I'm Joe Chapp with the Detroit Lions News Podcast. I'll see you in the next podcast. Obviously, I broke this up into segments because I had issues with, obviously, my dog was barking, and so I had to record this on a different platform. So I'm back, and so if you're watching YouTube, you're not going to learn anything. But obviously, if you're in the podcast, I had to kind of make a new video. But thank you for watching. Thank you for listening on the Detroit Lions News Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Chapp, and I will see you in the next podcast as we talk more Detroit Lions football next week, probably around next Tuesday or Wednesday. But we'll see you in the next podcast. Thank you for listening, and have a great one, and go Lions.